Haley, yeah.
Okay, now I got to get my glasses, but I found the Ralph Schoeneman. He's spelled two ways, by the way, on the internet as well. But Ralph is with S-C-H-E-O-E-N-M-A-N. And this is the very important biography written there of him. Biography of Ralph Schoeneman. I met him. I took him around when he came into Toronto from California, and he stayed for a while with Nelson Thal, and then he stayed at a hotel that was in the central part of Toronto, at the Four Seasons Hotel on Avenue Road. It's just north of Bloor on the east side. Now, that's been closed because they reset up shop on Bay Street now, the Four Seasons. So this biography is very important because it starts with a photo and says, this photo shows a young Ralph Schoeneman, far right, along with Bertram and Edith Russell, leading the Hiroshima Vigil March from the Cenopath to Hyde Park in London, 1961. It's a photograph that they put in the biography, and it says, of all the characters to have come and gone in the JFK assassination, Ralph Schoeneman surely ranks as one of the most interesting. He's a true leftist who has at one time or other been involved in virtually any cause you can name. He appears to still lead help me pronounce it. ITINERANT life. Internet?
Internecine. That means secret or covert.
Okay, covert, right. And I say he's a double agent. And I say he's Mossad. This is where I think they set up these internet sites that they're anti-Zionism, but they're actually pro-Zionism. Eric Hufschmid did the same thing.
Hufschmid, yeah.
Yeah, so they're actually looking for people that are anti-Semitic or that they say anti-Zionist. What a perfect way to set up shop there, waiting for your next fly to come into your spider web that you've woven. But anyway, this is what's so important. Of all the characters to come and go in the JFK assassination, he's one of the most interesting because he's committed to world changer, supposedly, right? He's part of the history-making part of it here. He works, for Mossad, just like Nelson does. 1958, he went to Britain to study economics at the London School of Economics, where he received an M.S. degree in economics in 1960. During that same year, he became associated with Bertrand Russell and started a committee of 100. A committee of 100 with a group of British intellectuals and leftists dedicated to bringing about real social change. I'm reading without my glasses. So
yeah, okay.
At one point, he was imprisoned with other leaders of the Committee of 100, presumably for civil disobedience. He was arrested again some years later after a rally in Grosvenor Square. After the JFK assassination, Schoeneman became a volunteer head of the London office of Mark Lane's Citizen Committee of Inquiry. He also functioned as the secretary of the British Who Killed Kennedy Committee, which he and Bertrand Russell had founded in late 1963. In this effort, he was concerned not so much for Kennedy or his politics, but rather for what he believed the assassination represented. Another indication of the way in which the elite ruling class runs America, even to the point of eliminating a young popular president. Now, one particularly bizarre incident, this is right in this biography here, one particular bizarre incident occurred in 1965, which has been recounted by Warren Hinkle in If You Have a Lemon, Make Lemonade. Shoneman stormed into the apartment of Edward Epstein, a Cornell graduate student, this is in bracket, Cornell graduate student, then writing his MS thesis on the Warren Commission, which later became the famous inquest in Ithaca, New York, in a desperate search for the FBI's report on the autopsy. Epstein, taken aback, had to call police before Shoneman would leave. You see, here he wants to compromise the autopsy report. Why does this Shoneman have to get his hot hands on it?
Yeah, repeat that part. What was he saying about it?
Here, I'll read. It's right in the biography, and I'll give you the site there. It's under, I have to get my glasses, but it's under biography of Ralph Shoneman. It's right on the internet here. One particular bizarre incident occurred in 1965 and has been recounted by Warren Hinkle in If You Have, this is in quotes, If You Have a Lemon, comma, Make Lemonade, end of quote. And then Shoneman stormed into the apartment of Edward Epstein, in brackets, a Cornell graduate student, then writing his MS thesis on the Warren Commission, comma, which would later become the famous inquest, parenthesis sign or whatever, in Ithaca, New York, in a desperate search of the FBI's report on the autopsy. Epstein was taken completely aback, had to call the police before Shoneman would leave. And Shoneman was Bertrand Russell's confidential secretary during his last years. In this capacity, he made excessive statements in Russell's name that Russell, and this was underlined and in a different color, blue on the internet here, yeah, reputed posthumously.
Posthumously.
Shoneman. Say that word?
Posthumously, that means after death.
Right. So Shoneman made many enemies, according to Warren Hinkle. Jean-Paul Chartier was said to gargle after just speaking with him.
Really?
Holy moly. I mean, this was the guy, Shoneman, that put the dent there in the Garrison's inquiry. They were just infiltrated big time. And Shoneman said it was him, Nelson keeps saying Garrison gave him the film, the Pruder film. It was this Shoneman, because they're fast friends, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was witness to a lot of stuff now, too, of what, who said what. Interesting that, but anyway, I interviewed Shoneman and made sure he got back to the Four Seasons and then bought him a hot chocolate. Like, I told him I don't have any money. I had everything, disappear. He wanted to know about that. You know, I mean, these people have their finger right there in every thing that happened to me, and they want to know, because that is so important that they wanted to eradicate what I had in my apartment. Now, the big story, too, that I wanted to get into, yeah, it was we were talking about Abel Danger and David Hawkins and Field McConnell. Field McConnell was the one who brought the case, the civil case.
Mm-hmm.
And that's in their file, and that's very important because it names all the mob. That mm-hmm. is legitimate stuff there, because it has everyone from Paul Martin to, the Bush or whatever. I'll go through that. But anyway, what I wanted to say is, when I was trying to get into my father's house, a lawyer by the name of Clayton Ruby thwarted my efforts to try to get into the house, because a woman who worked as Clayton Ruby's housekeeper, like cleaning lady, was sitting in the house and making sure that I didn't get in, saying she was common law wife. Now, there's been an effort to get rid of Ford, our mayor, and Clayton Ruby has made the big to-do about that there was a conflict of interest. Well, there was a major conflict of interest on behalf of this, Clayton Ruby and his wife. His wife has become a judge. She's a key player now in the judicial system. And they thwarted every single attempt that I came in, was trying to get in with a court order into the house to get all of my dad's estate, every piece of evidence, every single piece. That is the biggest conflict of interest that there ever was. Because what comes out is, like I said, I had the police officer walk out with a Richard Hovey suitcase, not knowing at that point in time who the suitcase belonged to, because so many years had lapsed. And the police asked me to go through it, right? It was still at my apartment, because then clothing, DNA from the clothing and everything could have been analyzed in detail. And this Clayton Ruby, and his wife, Harriet Sachs, didn't want the stuff to come out about what was happening in the house. Sylvia Halme, and I swore an affidavit in court about her thwarting, every attempt of my getting in there, and she says she's common law wife. Well, she appeared before the court with Clayton Ruby, said she wasn't. So the police said to me, well, she is or she isn't the wife, right? Anyway, she ended up dead right after my brother got in the house there, finally pushed his way in. This is serious stuff, what was going on here. I was trying to get pictures that showed, who my brother was. I had taken pictures of my brother at one point in dressed much like I said I dressed up Clyde as Osama bin Laden, and these were taken by the Lake Placid News, where they had my brother's name with flaming red beard, and what was so important is the photos, right, of a composite where they were looking for Balaclava Bill, but also for who the Raul was, the elusive Raul. So when I finally got in the house at one point there with my brother, I had taken multiple shots of him because I was doing, photography as well. And he kicked it in the air and he yelled, "Everything in this house has to be destroyed. Everything, everything." He started yelling at me. And that's where the big conflict started with me, between me and my brother, because I thought it was showtime now. That they're playing hardball, and I started fighting back right in the court systems, and I was thwarted by Clayton Ruby because he didn't want this to come out, that he had hired a woman who was collecting a pension from a blind guy who's dead, because this would make him look absolutely ridiculous. Clayton Ruby hires housekeeper who's collecting a pension for years after the guy is dead and writing all the letters to the Canadian government and fraudulently forging his name that she's collecting. She set up shop in this old guy, this blind guy's apartment on Sherbourne Avenue, I think it's where the apartment was. And the police wanted me to find out exactly the apartment number, because it was key. The key thing, this is in the federal level where she's collecting pensions. Now, what I was able to do was find out that she was sending major money that she had stolen from this man to her son and daughter, and they bought one bought a chalet and a lake, and the other a condo, and she was wanting to get enough money to go back to Finland and live in style there. So imagine, comes out a woman who has killed another blind guy who didn't see it coming, collecting his pension. high profile lawyer here in Toronto. He thwarted my attempts. The police were even frightened, right? And now Harriet Sack sets up this judge. They were thwarting my attempts, and I had a court order to get in there. What the hell did he have anything to say, what was in the estate? She wasn't common law wife. She was a common law wife with men that she was trying to get their monies from their bank. This was a very serious woman. I don't know how many are dead, but I know that she said that she had killed this guy. She had this book on how to kill, I couldn't believe when I found that, how to kill a man in something like so many ways.
God.
I fucking freaked out. Botulism. And that's why I had at that point, I was almost crying myself silly. I phoned, my friend Ron Sandelli, the head investigator there. I said, Ron, we're running out here with this Toronto police officer with my dad's ship. We've got to analyze that shit. So I put it in the freezer. And that's, even the ship was still in the freezer at that place where they said, come out of your house now, right? Or out of your apartment now. Holy moly. I mean, this was serious takedown here. We're talking about big players here that we're thwarting. Who's this Clayton Ruby? Does he have an association with Jack Ruby? I tell you, he started talking serious business with my brother. So he knew. There's an association there, I tell you that. All kinds of people. But anyway, I tell you, I was beside myself, right? I walked out of the place with this cop with the Barry Goldwater for President bumper stickers. They were in my apartment. Like I said, I had Richard Hovey's wallet, but I didn't have any ID in there. Later, when I started analyzing, I didn't even remember this kid's name. All I remember the kid was Dickie. Right? And not until the cadavers, the skeletal remains came into, the limelight, then I understood everything. And every attempts that I had made then to call the OPP regarding the Rain Richard Gravett stuff was thwarted. If OPP and the RCMP and all these people wanted to really solve their cases, then if somebody comes with a key piece of evidence, we're talking evidence with SuperFrac, which is a very serious item, right?
Yes.
I can't believe it, how I was fouled up. And then to have this fucking Tony Smith phone up Clyde and say, Haley Otis has been taping you. Huh?
Hmm.
Right?
Not good.
Not good is right. Then Clyde calls me and says, guess what, Haley? I just got a call from Detective Sergeant Tony Smith, because that's where Clyde started really feeling the sweat, and that's what they're doing right now with the media. All of Clyde's hits are being played hour after hour. Detective Steve Ryan, do you know anything about this case and that case? And they, Christine Prince and Erwin Harrison Gilmore and Susan Tice and on and on. It goes into the Frank Roberts. They're sweating him. Well, this woman, like I said, Catherine Martin, called Clyde and said, we need for you to come into the headquarters. And that's where I saw Clyde fall apart at the seams. What do they want me there for? They want me to know about this Chad Winter. And then Clyde said, of course he knew friggin' Chad Winter. the mob wanted to take this nigger out big time. Usually niggers are worth no more, he said, than $500. They were cheaper even in the 60s and 50s. I'd kill a nigger for nickels and dimes, he'd say, or for free. Anyway, what he said is they gave him $15,000 to waste this Chad Winter guy because he was... They passed him a gun. They give it to the niggers. The niggers use it in their commission of crime, and it comes back to the mob because they want to blame it on the niggers. That's where I said Arthur Lucas didn't do the crime. He did the hanging, and it was a serious, terrible hanging, capital punishment, where his head got cut off in being hung, and the blood was spilt on a chaplain who gave this guy the last rites, and this guy was yelling to his moment of death, "I'm innocent." Freaking hell. Jesus Christ. Anyway, what happened is this Chad Winter was killed not far there in that same, vicinity that Lauren Gibson was. And... anyway, right after that, Tony Smith, Detective Sergeant Tony Smith, got involved, told Clyde, then Clyde tried to do a takedown of me, put the balaclavas on, but a week later after he called, he was trying to get entry. I call 911, and everything that I'm saying, that they're out there, and they're saying they can't get in, and I could hear the stupid son saying, Paul saying, "Of all the times that Haley came into the house, why didn't you get her key? How do we get in now?" And the two friggin' idiots there were yelling and screaming, and it took a half an hour for the stupid cops to show up, and they're trying to come in with balaclavas to kill me, because Tony Smith said, "Haley Otis has been taping you." Fuck! The cops send him to kill me. Do you get what I'm talking about here?
Yes.
Jesus Christ. Then he continues to follow me, all what I'm doing. Then I move into the 122 Scollard, and then he's trying to take me out right in public, right in the Hazleton Lane. I call 911, and that's where I told you two cops, plainclothes cops, come, and the first thing that comes out of their mouth is, "Do I look like a conspiracy?" And the other one says, "Do I?" I mean, hello, I'm tagged as a conspiracy nut. What did that have
How
to come out of their mouth?
That?
I said, "I want your badge numbers. Write your badge numbers." They wouldn't give it to me. So I went and I took a note of the car out in the front on Avenue Road of the cruiser they showed up in. By law, cops have to identify themselves. They can't come up and say, "Hey, you called 911. I want to verify that you are cops," right?
Yeah,
I tell you, I've had this shadow, after me all my life. All my life. I want this to come to a head. This is serious stuff. I mean, holy moly. When I'm giving this type of stuff to police, and then to top it off, this is the short end of it. Catherine Martin was the one that was calling him in, Catherine Martin. Then I was trying to get to, to stop a hit that happened. First of all, I went to Julian Fantino to try to stop the killing, because I had foreknowledge that it was going to go down, of Gaetano Panapinto, the enforcer for Vito Rizzuto, right? That guy didn't talk to me. Hmm? They let it happen. He became now top ranking because he destroyed my file. I'm sure that Camiso that was extradited got my very expensive wall unit from art shop, right? Because they divvied up my pie, eradicated all the evidence in my apartment there, and we're all the way laughing to the bank, including a pair of boots that I bought, winter boots. Can you imagine? You were left just with light clothing there in fall time. You have no clothing, no nothing. And I had bought a pair for winter. Well, these pair of boots that they were looking for, they were Mark's Work Warehouse. They had a very distinctive sole, and they're being sought after for the person who did the crime of the killing of Sonia Voroshin. Same way that Woods was killed. Her car was found in a public spot. Marie Woods' car was found at the Scarborough Town Center. She was found in, her cadaver was found in a rural area. Clyde showed me where he had put her. I Google mapped it. Shit, I've had enough with this crap, with these cops saying, yeah. If they want to take down a serious person who's dealing with explosives, who put an explosive device in the Defense Department's window in Building B, took out four people, but who died was this woman by the name of Saint-Germain, he said, right, because she bled to death in the explosion. It wiped off one of her arms, and she bled to death. And the other three were seriously wounded there, but lived. This is serious information I'm giving. How would I know about the Saint-Germain woman that Clyde said he killed? He also said he wanted to get rid of the archival material. He blew up the National Film Board of Canada's building. Because they had to get rid of the archives. A lot of the stuff are on film. They have to destroy the stuff. It all links into every serious matter that happened. The National Archives of Canada, the National Film Board, serious materials in there. You know, wipe it out. I mean, what was 9/11 all about with the building there? They had to wipe off all the Enron material and all the stuff because it had links to the government there. So, this is true. What Abel Danger, Field McConnell, the civil preamble, I'll just go through the civil. Download what I just said, the Ralph Schoeneman, and that key piece there that he had tried to grab from this articling student the data on the autopsy of Kennedy. What the hell is he going in there for? Right? Questions should be asked. Who is this Ralph Schoeneman?
What was he doing in relation to the autopsy?
Well, it looks like the way I'm looking at it here is he had to get all the stuff, that was reality stuff that maybe this student had gotten to through a classified, information that he was requesting. He might have got this articling student, somehow he got wind of the true autopsy, and that had to be removed. Because they've been thwarting certain of the classified information for an awful long time of how he died and where the bullet entries and who were the people at the autopsy. So they don't want these things to come out. That's why these players go right in there quick to thwart any kind of court case, and they try to make Garrison into an idiot. And that's why I like JFK's... the movie, because what it makes him is into a hero. In the end, he says, well, it's going to be open, but the big players will be all dead by that time. So let's wake up, America. No, and I like that part where Donald Sutherland plays Fletcher Prouty.
Yes.
And he says, all of the assassins that were key players in the assassination of Kennedy will never be tried for anything they do. Anything they do. Get that. And that's why files, oh yeah, I was there, I did it. Well, he's sitting in prison there, James Files. He knows about this stuff, right? If he was some sort of with Nicoletti or whatever, bringing in hardware or whatnot, he is damn sure to say, "Hey, I was part of it. I want out here because I'm one. I was one that any part of the players should be let out, and I shouldn't be doing time." Has Clyde done any time for anything? One night he was incarcerated because of that incident, and I got that out of him when he said he quickly changed guns to a staple gun. Cops were on their way, but they were too slow, and his lawyer says, "You have got to let him go," because he quickly got rid of the gun. The kid saw it, the mother saw it, who had a restraining order, and she was she's dead. Valerie Daphne Kinman, the wife, is dead. Anyway, what happened was he quickly changed the gun to a staple gun and said it was no gun, it was a staple gun. I mean, this guy's got an answer. He's so quick to react. He's so quick to have a response for anything. So for me to try to get physical evidence, you know, put my life into danger to try to get the authorities to do something. I photographed his walkie-talkie, that his favorite word is target. Favorite phrase, target on track. It was bought for him by that head Anthony Camiso for his hits. The guns are made by a company, a guy by the name of Zoltan at a Para Ordnance. How would I know about that? Para Ordnance. Companies, names that he throws out, and these are key things. Well, what happened? Zoltan was arrested, right? I said Clyde's next after the Eddie Mello and the Gintana Panapinto. I laid information that his next hit is going to be Joe Bravo, who took over Gintana Panapinto's henchman role there for Vito Rizzuto. Anyway, they quickly arrested him. So that was part of Project RIP, Rest in Peace. I don't get not one penny for putting my life at risk. And these cops say, hey, we went after this rapist, and all these cops, you know, put their life at risk trying to get him. Hey, but I've been trying to take out the guy who killed JFK, Martin Luther King, Robert Kennedy, John Jr., and I have put my entire life on the risk, all my life since the age of 10, to get evidence against this piece of shit. Fuck, I can't believe it. I'm getting rude again here, but, you know, when I'm working so hard, work with me. Take these cases, these cold cases down. Solve the goddamn, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, Jesus Christ. I mean, I can't believe it. I just want, you know what my whole thing was? I want to make the entire FBI, CIA, RCMP, OPP, Halton into a laughing stock. Oh, lady, first starts out trying to get the pieces of evidence as Nancy Drew. Then she gets into, playing, Money Penny. But now she's at a stage that she's Margaret Rutherford, who makes the cop look like an idiot, but she solves the case. I love that, you know, with Margaret Rutherford and the fumbling inspector that comes, because she knows how to get the evidence. That's one of my favorite films, right? Margaret Rutherford. I can't see it enough without laughing and at the film. Anyway, Google Clyde Jr. Clyde Forshaw Jr., his favorite book in Facebook, The Art of War. He's already done the hits there with Patricia Rael, and he was part of the takedown of Gintana Panapinto. the enforcer for Rito.
Okay, you want
Rito
me to
Rizzuto. So if you go, sorry,
Clyde Forshaw,
I'm not going
Jr.
in at clock. Yeah, and then you'll see Alfred Jr. They put their teenage pictures. I can't.
They got
get
a Clyde Forshaw on Facebook.
Yeah, Jr. They're stupid, eh? But anyway, they put themselves in there, so they take out young teenagers' prey. Huh? He's put his face in there, but with sunglasses on, Alfred. Clyde Forshaw.
Yeah, he's sitting on a park bench here.
Which one?
The Clyde Forshaw Jr. is sitting on a park bench.
Yeah? Okay, I couldn't get in it, but I got...
Studied at U of Toronto, lives in Toronto, from Toronto.
God. Clyde Forshaw, Forshaw.
Yeah, sure, of course, I got him.
Does he have sunglasses on?
No.
Sorry?
No, he does not.
Okay, then that's a different Clyde Forshaw.
Well, I'm not so sure. It says studied at U of Toronto, lives in Toronto.
No, No, he never studied in U of Toronto.
Works at Yeah Sure Stalkers.
Sorry?
Says it works at Yeah Sure Stalkers.
No.
That's not Clyde.
No, there might be. There might be a few. This is Clyde Forshaw Jr.
Yeah, I know.
Alfred is also on there, and it's their teenage pictures when they were in the school kids. They're much older now. They're seasoned killers. But Clyde Forshaw is right on in Facebook. Now he, Clyde Forshaw Jr., there's an arrest record where he violated his parole. He had used an assault on a girl using a pellet gun, shot at her. There's an arrest record with him. He's already got a record, Clyde Forshaw Jr. Now that same pellet gun, they played Russian roulette in my head. And Tony Smith says, well, a pellet gun wouldn't kill you. I said, yeah, pointed right at the head. You kidding here? You're telling me this? I want to cry. We don't have a police force. We don't have to serve and protect. We never have. In any state, in any province, you know, New York, Wisconsin. Organized crime to continue on in the vein that it does. Mike Amato said it correctly. It's a mandate. They can't work without each other. It has to be compromised. The police have been compromised way back when. If you got humming and hawing from you know, FBI field person and not taking down serious information, there's nobody. Remember when I said there's nobody at the helm? There's nobody's at home, and they've made it like that. Why are these, how many, statistically, trying to find out how many people in the city of New York are wasted every single year, how many cases are solved and remain unsolved from 1945 on. Has anyone done that? To see how many in each major city?
Hey, let me ask you this. Was Clyde involved in the Tippit shooting? You may have said something about this before.
Totally. He was the one. That's why I'm now analyzing everyone that he's done the same way. That's why it gets me, you know, when you said, where was he? Right? I said he did the killing of Colonel Attila Altıkat, the military Turkish embassy liaison for the Turkish government. He showed me how, using a semi-automatic 9mm Browning that had 13 shots in it. He said he got 10, shot 11, 10 hit him in the head and neck, threw the gun in the window, took him down at the Western Park Parkway when the car was the second from the front of the parkway that you know had the red light. He jumped out of the car because his son had turned off, came up right to the window, shot right through it, bang, 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 you know, like whatever, wasted him. This is a serious, serious assassin.
Who was that he was killing in that instance?
Colonel Attila Alticat, cold case.
And where,
of the Ottawa police.
You mean this was a police colonel?
This was a military attaché for the Turkish government.
A military attaché for the Turkish government. Jesus.
Mm-hmm. So who is he working for? The Canadian government? Is this guy a spy? Now, what's very important is right after that he had knocked off this... this Vietnamese guy there on 100. I'll tell you, I've got what you had wrong was the guy's address there at Bruno Siegel, right? Remember,
hang on,
I started
second.
Reading.
Hang on a second, Haley. Let me go to that.
Okay. Yeah. Let me correct everything that's wrong, but I don't have it in front, so
yeah, I got it.
I have to. I don't want to compromise what I've got here. So, what I'm going to do is go at some point to that computer cafe and bring it up so I can see what you've got wrong there. The address is wrong. It's I think 110 Hamilton where wasted this Bruno
Siegel
right after the Salvatore Trombardi. Oh my God.
And of course, I said,
"Please let me get my glasses because I can't read." Okay, one second. I found my glasses. Now, if you go back to what I was saying yesterday about the cheap, deadly dime storm alarm clock that he took out Meyer Lush or tried to, because they were appearing before.
Yeah, which address? Which address do I have wrong?
Oh, that was at the Sutton Place. The bomb that exploded was the Sutton Place Hotel. That's down at Wellesley and Bay.
Oh no, I meant in the article. Don't I have an address wrong?
Oh yeah, hold on. Let me just get that. Please bear with me here now.
Okay, I gotta take a leak. I'll be right back.
Okay, all right.
Okay.
Yeah, we better put that the spelling of the name in the. It's either S E I.
Where are we?
Bruno Siegel.
Have I got him?
Two people he took out, this girl who was a 20-year-old prostitute, Susan Siegel, and she was found on Edith, right by the...
I've got that in the article.
No, you don't have that, but two Siegels he took out, this guy Bruno Siegel.
Yeah.
Susan Siegel. Now, his Tobinsky's cases go back to Mabel Crumback and Miriam McDowell, and I'll give you the spellings of all these things. Oh, shit. Bear with me for a second.
Yeah, I just want to make sure we get the corrections into the article.
Yeah, hold on. Yeah, because you've got my brother's name spelt wrong, but that's good because it saves my ass right now here. These are serious people. I mean, any Chinese or anyone can come up and kill me at any time with the exact information being given now. You know, mm-hmm. These are serious world organized crime people. That's why the preamble, laying of the civil suit, names all the players, the Vito Rizzutos, the organized crime groups of the Bonanno family and their playing of the 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
Because they took all of the mob got involved with taking the material out into a field where it was sent to China. So planned out. Imagine, get rid of the evidence. Get rid of the JFK evidence, and the stuff goes on and on and on. Every single news piece for this to continue, it's a major agenda here. People don't get it with. They want to make sure that no one has any rights they never had in the first place. People keep on talking about the Constitution. I interviewed a very, very major individual who was questioning the Constitution and how he came up against this problem. Gee, hold on. Bruno. Anyway, what was so important is what I said there yesterday was person, I think I already have it here. Clyde killed two girls, Wendy Tedford and Donna Stern, shot them in the back of the head when he was on the job on the bus, and he shot in a similar manner, a guy by the name of Lauren Gibson. So what I'm going through is showing all the similarities of the unsolved cases. They don't even have the Lauren Gibson case at all. He was killed Thursday, October the 27th, 1960, right after my brother and Clyde had... gotten away from that area. It was on the Land Street. The car, Lauren Gibson's car, was left at the O'Keefe Lane. What happened is they were still full of adrenaline. Grabbed me. I was already asleep. Took me in the car and wanted to show me what had happened. I was thrown onto Lauren Gibson's body. I was like, I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what to do because I thought it was a drunk. And then, anyway, they realigned his hat because they put the hat that he looked like he was sleeping, and the body was found a few hours later. This was serious intimidation that I had. They did the same thing with this Elizabeth Henrietta Kirby Boyington that was killed in 1959. Where Clyde had sat on the woman's chest and cut her throat, cutting the esophagus, the, what do you call it, the...
aorta?
Well, the esophagus, the wind passage, esophagus, the hyoid bone. He, like, almost took off her head. And then I was to look for a fawn, right? As soon as I said, I don't see anything here where a fawn is, a baby fawn. And I'm just at the age of 59, I was again just 12 or whatever. And when I was close to the body, my brother and whatever and Clyde threw me right on this woman's body. I'll never forget that. And Clyde had killed this woman named Elizabeth for Elizabeth Windsor, the queen, because she was passing through. The body was left for her to understand that Clyde said, I left the Lizzie for the Lizzie. And I went running and screaming, and then I ran to the first building on, you know, on Bloor Street there, trying to get help. And then, I don't know, some individuals found the body then that were walking their dog, because I was pressing every single button on the whatever. Why isn't that case solved from way back when the Queen passed right through there? The Queen Elizabeth, do you understand?
Yes.
When she last passed through Toronto, there was another body that was found right beside the church where she appeared there on... I'll give you all this stuff that you see this stuff. The Queen... I left the Lizzie for the Lizzie. Holy shit. Hyo on the esophagus and the whatever. All of the larynx, sorry. Esophagus, larynx, and hyoid, the cricoid bone. And the same way it was done that it was Walter Chubinsky that taught Clyde how to hit the, you know, at the back of the neck into the... you know, the vein there, the main vein pumping blood.
Mm-hmm.
But that'll kill you instantly. He knows his anatomy. But anyway, he killed a woman by the name of Agnes Organ. Where would I pull these names from, pray tell, James, right?
Yes.
Fuck. I just, you know, I'm beside myself all the time. And I'm running to cops, and they laugh in my freaking face. That's the worst of the worst. You know, when you're thinking, oh, maybe I can get some cooperation here, and they might solve some of these cases. Yeah, and three cops. I'll never live, ever stomach that day as long as I live. Tony Smith, Detective Sergeant Tony Smith. Anyway, what he did to make sure that I can't place a complaint against him. He set up shop from the homicide squad going into internal investigations. Told me if I'm ever even seen in the headquarters of the Toronto Police Force, I'll be arrested for trespass. Get that?
You're kidding me.
He made sure, yeah. So then, because I was trying to call his superior, Yzette, Steve Yzette, Steve Yzette took a lawyer who was also a former cop because they had a lot of words. Catherine Martin was never named, but there was a serious woman in the homicide that said, I was sexually harassed by Steve Yzette. That was all thwarted, so this guy wouldn't come forth and say, well, Haley Otis was trying to call me get in on the, lay information regarding Eddie Mello and the Eddie Mello's going down. That was thwarted on purpose. I had a top OPP officer that I phoned and told him, you know, that Clyde had planned this Eddie Mello hit. And what he said, this cop, Larry Tronstad, who didn't want Eddie Mello dead. Haley, don't feel so bad. Who bought the dinner in celebration that Eddie Mello was wasted was Anthony Camiso. And he was toasting his wine glass, you know, over towards me, and I thought, holy shit, I'm going to be dead. He's the one who bought the dinner. Clyde's too cheap to buy it, right? Expensive dinner at the restaurant that Clyde's son worked at. Clyde's son has worked in various restaurants, Windsor Arms, Octagon, Rooney's. Octagon and Rooney's was owned by Frank Stronach. So, you know, these are people that Clyde said his son introduced him to Frank Stronach as the made man. They knew each other. Huh?
Yeah.
I mean, I could be wasted anyway by ex-cops, OPP, RCMP. The only decent person that I spoke to was Mark Burke, and they wasted him in Haiti, right?
Yes.
Oh, my God, the shit that you've got, Haley. Like, he didn't say shit, right? He was a professional. But the stuff that you've got it, lady. You've got it here. And they made sure that he never came to see me. He says, I'm on my way. Well, he never made it. Somehow they changed what he had to do that day. He had to go to Haiti to set up police force there, a strong police force. I think I've spelled that Siegel wrong. Let me try to somehow get it. It was in 1967. His name has got to be correct in there. That's never been solved, the Bruno Siegel case there. Now, what was so important is yesterday I was talking about the Meyer Rush bombing, and the guy that was going before, it says Rush was to appear in court today with Toronto's lawyer, Joseph, in brackets, Diamond Joe. At the end of the letter, he had put Bruno Diamond. Do you see where I'm coming from here?
Yeah.
Okay. He's playing. He's toying with the authorities. You know, he puts key names here. Who's this Diamond? Oh, yeah. Oh, I see. Right. Oh, right at the time there that the letter was written. Okay, that letter was written because they were appearing during that whole year, this Diamond fellow, in 1967, the letter that appeared, I didn't even know about it. That's why they had to hightail me out of Toronto. If I would have seen that letter that was sent to Sherry Wallace, the letter appeared on the front pages of the newspaper approximately August the 15th, 1967. And he had threatened her, fork out this money. It wasn't a lot of money. It was just a small-time bit of money. Completely destroyed her office. She had a company by the name of Career Girls that she did, getting hot-looking babes into offices, basically, is what she did as secretaries. Ended up, Clyde said, she had a kid, and they wasted her kid down the road, so she got the message.
God, just so awful. Huh? It's just so awful.
It's like there's no end. There's no end. Now, do they really want to solve this case, or do they really want to always have this police budget? Can you imagine if I solve all these cases, there would be no police budget. All the police would be made to look as major fools that have been thwarting the cases. Against these victims that are coming forth, don't have a hope in hell of ever collecting of a wrongful death. The wrongful death claims against the government in RCMP, OPP, Toronto Police, Halton Police, Ottawa Police would waste this government down to nothing. Because they were all in on it on the cover-up. That's why they all hum and haw and, oh, yeah, I'll be back with you. I have to call these guys. They have to be put on, on an advisory here, we mean to play hardball. You have made an attempt. Already they're thwarting it, right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, but I do think the fact that there's this forthcoming criminal commission hearing, right, in Ottawa, I think that's very important.
Right. Well, now the players that are coming forth are being wasted. Now, Vito Rizzuto's name, let's go into Abel Danger. I'm going to find this Bruno Siegel later, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But as I remember in my top of my head, it was $110 Hamilton. Anyway, when you go in, I'll give you the correct spelling so that you know. Colonel Alticott, so you don't make a mistake with that, because that's very important, right?
Yes.
And he killed him on a Friday. I'll never forget. He said he had planned the whole thing for a week. They used to follow him from his Regina or Regina, however you want to say it, residence. He had an apartment, and to the Turkish embassy. It's Colonel A-T-I-L-L-A. And his last name is A-L-T-I-K-A-T. And Clyde said he had killed him, and he explained to me what weapon he used, how he did it, how he planned it, who the players were, that he even had the audacity right after the assassination to have called I think it was the Ottawa Citizen, something like that, or radio station. At the top of my head, I can't quite remember. I think it was either the Ottawa Citizen or the radio station or something like that, and said, in a very low voice, much like the low voice you use when you're loosed, expected you're going to die, in a low voice that, with an accent that, I have done the killing and I did it for the Red Army or something like that, and hung up. Jesus Christ. Did you get the spelling?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And he was the military attaché of the Turkish embassy. That's who this guy was. Anyway, what happened was the other link that he had called, like I said, he had wasted a guy, the York Regional area, and he had called to say, hey, there's a dead body in that house, and then hung up, right, with a low voice to say, I've left another cadaver for you. And then when he put the bomb, he said in the building B in the Department of National Defense, he said he had called, I think he said, the radio station, and he said in 1 minute the bomb's going to, blow up at the National Defense or whatever, and hung up. Hello? Unbelievable. I just can't believe it. This guy's been bopping in and out, and then Tony Amato says, well, he's been working here as a TTC driver for 30 years, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I said, that is his shadow, or his upfront, or what do you call it, just his ruse as a job. His real job is assassin. They all have a job, these guys, as a cover.
Just like Clyde is a bus conductor.
That's right. Now, I was very proud of Tony Amato going before the commission and saying that the mob is accountants, bankers, truckers, bus drivers. Clyde drove the bus when he killed the two girls, Wendy Tedford, Donna Stern.
Why'd he kill them? I mean, this guy's just sadistic. He just murders people just to murder them.
Well, he did this on a real, you know, he's sadistic, number one. But with the Wendy Stern, Donna Stern, and Wendy Tedford and Donna Stern was, like I said, he parked his bus, like he goes into, that route was, he goes into the Yorkdale Shopping Center. And then turns around in there and goes up Wilson Avenue. That was the route there. So they interviewed him, all right?
Mm-hmm.
They interviewed him also the time that he wasted the what do you call it, Salvador Trombardi, because he was delivering for the seal test milk company. And actual witnesses had seen a guy jumping over the fence after the assassination of Trombardi. I said it right, I guess, here. Salvatore Trombardi. Forgot his fedora. That was in the snow. That went to Interpol. If Interpol has his goddamn hat, he's either got the guy's DNA of his goddamn system or his actual hair. They probably have both, right? Probably didn't even have the system because he just put the fedora hat, changed into his milk delivery outfit, and was interviewed by saying, well, your seal test truck was in the immediate area. Somebody saw you jumping over the fence. Oh, yeah, I was jumping over the fence because I took a shortcut. Hello, like I was a milkman and jumping over a fence to take a shortcut. I gave this information to Larry Tronstadt. He quickly retired and got his pension. What was I looking? Oh yeah, Wendy Tedford. Now, what's so important with this Wendy Tedford is the lies that came out of that. He was interviewed, all right, this piece of shit.
Haley, now, sir, we were going to go over anything you thought I should correct in the article.
Yeah, well, first of all, go into, I think it's 110 Hamilton, and I got to get the spellings of each of these people right. I'm scared that if you put my brother's actual name right,
it's okay.
Then
I won't change that.
Just leave it as it is.
Yeah, I'll just leave it. Right.
Just leave it right now because there's one letter that's not right.
Yeah, yeah, that's fine.
Okay. Now, what happened was Clyde said this to me about Wendy Tedford and Donna Stern. The girls were in his bus. And he dropped the revolver that he had picked up from you know, when you go into a bus depot and you want to put your suitcase, whatever, they're locked.
Yeah, locker,
right?
Yeah.
Okay, the deal was all the time, the next hit or whatever, both had keys. The Camiso family had keys and Clyde had keys. So his instructions for the next hit were to be picked up. He had picked up this weapon and dynamite, and the weapon was a 38 caliber Colt. Stuck it in his his jacket, went on the bus with the dynamite stuck in his jacket. The piece fell on the floor. The girls saw it. Clyde said to me the two girls were wasted because they saw something they shouldn't. It would have compromised him, a bus driver, with a piece and dynamite. So that story of this sit and eat was a piece of evidence that was shit to divert, because the first pieces that came out, Clyde said the first information that came was correct. A bus was seen on Wilson Avenue going back and forth. He was looking for a place to drop them. And that was right in the area there where the body was found, right? At 9, it was, he wasted the girls right in a vacant area, brought the bus in there, 949 Wilson. Can you imagine if this hits the front pages of the World Paper? Toronto bus driver wastes two girls on the job.
Unbelievable.
Huh?
Unbelievable.
Do you understand why the cover-up? Don't make me into, when he had gone into Ignacio Drago, right, and posed as police officer, the officers, and that's in the news, Clyde said that to me as well. It's like, phrase that they always used, let sleeping dogs lie.
Hey, Haley, I found the seagull. It's S-E-I, not S-I-E.
Wait a minute, say that again.
Bruno Siegel at 100 Hamilton. It's S-E-I instead of S-I-E.
S, what did you say it was, S-I?
Yeah, I've got it in there. You said I had it spelled wrong. I got it S-I-E.
No, the Hamilton. It's 110 Hamilton, not 100.
Oh, 110 Hamilton. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I've got
let
that
me
fixed.
Try to still find, the Bruno Siegel. Now, Bruno Siegel was done a short while after Salvador Trombardi, right? That was January 6th, year 1967.
Yeah.
So Bruno Siegel was just down, a week or two after that.
Listen, Siegel, I just want to catch. I want to catch anything you think I should correct in the article to make sure.
Yeah,
I don't.
Hold on. Yeah, let me just. That was wrong. So, but let me just try to get that right here. I can't.
I got it as 110 Hamilton now.
Okay, because I think that was correct. I'm trying to find where I put it because I actually Google searched. He showed me the house where Siegel lived and where he wasted him.
It is S-I-E-G-A-L, though, right?
I think. Yeah. Give me a second here.
Yeah, sure.
Bruno. Because he married the two words, right? The Bruno and the diamond, because it's like flaunting, the cops. Yeah, it's a Bruno diamond. Figure out who that guy is, right? Bruno? Oh, yeah, Bruno. Yeah, there was a Bruno. Like, if there wasn't the Google search with names, they have a whole new technology here to put associations and names and to see if there's some sort of similarity into major cold cases. There should be, right? Mm-hmm. You put up, extortion letters. Everything should be analyzed. Do you know what I found? How difficult it was for me to get these things? To be thwarted, I was thwarted right from the Google search from day one. I'd have to go through each page by page, front page, page two, page three, page four, page five, if I'd look for Elizabeth Henrietta Boyington or whatever. Her name is spelled so many different ways, Elizabeth Kirby, Elizabeth Henry, Elizabeth, whatever. Anyway, it comes out that I found everything, like I said, that Clyde had ever told me. Like one day when he said to me, I can't believe that story, when he said, I said, did you ever have any remorse for anything that you do? Did you ever stop a crime? He says, yeah, I was trying to blow away a taxi driver and steal his money and then waste him. And the guy burst out in tears, and he had me in tears. I said, wow, that was wild that you did that. And the guy was saying, don't kill me. Please don't kill me. I've got a whole family. I'm so poor, and you're trying to take the little bit of money I have? And he got Clyde crying, and he said, go and confess. And Clyde said, well, he gave the money back to the guy. He let the taxi driver live, and then he ran to the church where he wanted to confess, and he banged on the front of the church. And I said, well, what happened, Clyde? Did you get in? He said, no, the church was closed. So I said, gee, guess what? God wasn't there to hear the confession. The door was closed to God for the confession of Clyde to have confessed. I'll tell you the truth. That was on the front page of the Toronto Star. I couldn't believe that I found that.
Haley, tell me. Tell me what else I should change in the article to make it right.
Right. Now, I haven't found it yet, but anyway, with the seagull thing. The seagull, I want to make sure that the spelling is right. And then I'll go through the whole thing to make sure that nothing is spelt, misspelt, right? Anybody's name. Because when we put, you know, when you put all this Meyer Rush's name, Meyer, M-Y-E-R, Rush, R-U-S-H.
Where is that?
Well, that was what I related to. You haven't put anything up on that yet, right? We just went over that Meyer Rush bomb in bed kills mind stock promoter. That came out on Friday, November the 10th, 1967. But he wasn't killed. The first article was wrong. The police, the general hospital, said they gave him 10% chance of surviving. Clyde said he married the Meyer Rush to the springs in the mattress.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Now, what was so important was Yes?
Yeah, I just want to...
In order to, you know, to find the seagull thing, I need a bit of
Anything else beside the seagull thing? I mean, did we have...
I haven't seen it. Like, I don't have your thing in front of me, okay?
Okay,
not to compromise what I've got right now. I wanted to get on another computer and do it there.
Yeah.
All the things that are misspelled, I'll go over.
Okay, make a list.
And make sure that everything, but you corrected, I think it was 110.
Yeah, 110 Hamilton, yeah.
Now, where he wasted, this is very important in the of the day that he had killed that little girl, Patricia Lupton, L-U-P-T-O-N. That was March the 9th, 1959. Then there was the Ida Dean Jean. That same night she was found, like the next day, and that was on... Hold on, I have to find that. You haven't even put that in. But a month later, a woman, an old woman, was bludgeoned, like hit over the head, by the name of Catherine DeLuc, D-I-D-L-U-K.
You know, who would believe that all of these crimes are being committed by the same person?
Exactly.
I mean, you got a huge...
On and on. And then the Toronto Police Force haven't even put Catherine DeLuc or Patricia Lupkin in their cold case file. Detective Steve Ryan has only put in their cold case file Wendy Tedford, Donna Stern, put the Frank Roberts case, certain select ones, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they've eliminated all the key to show there's been a pattern with the children killings that date back from the unsolved case of Wayne Millett and Gary Morris, and they took down, the government put this... Peter Woodcock incarcerated him. He was trying to explain himself that he wasn't the one who did it. They put him in penitanguish, and he was a Manchurian that was sitting in penitanguish all his life. And who found his body when Haley Otis was looking up the stuff on all of the, you know, the trying to get into police reports, and I was trying to get into the files just in the newspaper of what he had said. All of a sudden, the next day, imagine this. I go into the files of the Toronto Star in the library, and then the next day, when I got everything, I start putting the date at the top, right? Because then I three-hole punch the pages. and I've got most all the ones from the Globe and Mail and the Toronto Star, and I wanted to get the Telegram as well, and any other newspaper article around the globe regarding this Peter Woodcock story. The little girl that had this, the stick put in her vagina, and then the next one that shows the link with Lizzie Tomlinson with the reed put into the vagina, but he was trying to make it come out of the mouth.
This is sick stuff.
And this is police that have fucking covered this shit up. And believe you me, I'm gonna waste this government for the cover up. Major lawsuits would be emanating from this, of wrongful deaths and the cover-up. They want me shut up. That's why cops are sending Clyde to kill her. She knows the whole friggin' history. They don't want this stuff to come out. This is heavy stuff. But the worst of the worst is the children crimes, the old ladies that had their eyeballs gouged out, that were bludgeoned to death. Steve Ryan just brought up another one that's not far from the family that's asking to be solved, the Irwin Harrison Gilmore and the Susan Teist. Just up the street where the family lives, he wasted this Margaret McDonald with a fucking pepper grinder, bludgeoned her friggin' brains out. I'm trying to show the similarities here. And are they going to allow me?
Haley, should we take a break and I'll call you back?
Let's take a break. And what I'm going to do is look for the Bruno Siegel. So we'll make sure that the spelling is right. And then I'll make sure. Okay, I'll
call you in about an hour.
All right.
Thanks.
Bye.
Thanks, Haley.